All right, everybody, welcome back. Ludini Rock and Roll Circus Musicians Mastermind in full swing once again. We have our usual cast of experts here in the house. We've got Joe Freeman and Carrie J.K. Welcome, gentlemen.
Hi.
And so today we're going to be getting into the topic of persona, presence, and how that brings you around to kind of what your brand is as a musician. I think that presence and persona are terms that musicians kind of can grasp onto like pretty easily. Branding is more of a marketing term, but it kind of does. It's kind of the same thing. It's kind of the marketing equivalent of presence and persona. So we're going to show you how those things kind of all plug in together and why it's really important to have this in place so that your audience can, you know, readily latch on to who you are, what you do, and go along with you on your journey. All right, so I know that Carrie has a lot to say about some stuff to say anyhow about the idea of persona, and Joe's got a lot of ideas on branding, I'm sure, as do I. So let's go ahead and start with this idea. How do we want to define what this is for people so they kind of have a place to start?
Well, persona is essentially who you are as presented to the world. It's not necessarily who you are, as we'll get into, but it is the version of yourself that's presented in connection with a very specific thing, which in this case is your music. As we're going to see, there's a lot of this stuff. It can't be completely made up out of the blue. If it is, then it's going to be hard to keep going. So it's generally based on something that's there anyway.
Okay.
But then what's generally said is about this whole idea of turning it up to 11. But we'll explore all that as we go. Before we do, last week I started with a word association. I'm going to do it again. In fact, I've got two word associations, and I'm going to throw this at both of you.
Okay.
So the first one is authentic.
Comments real. On authentic. Real, being yourself, unpretentious, not trying to make something up to pander to what you think people might like, but just kind of really being yourself.
Yeah. So based on, I'm not going to comment yet, Joe.
Yeah. So sometimes that can mean just opening up and allowing yourself to express things that you normally wouldn't be comfortable or naturally express without, you know, a little bit of pushing. So, you know, sometimes you may have gone through a mess or something that you kind of keep that deep down inside. And, you know, you don't feel like that's something that you naturally would express to other people. But if you're being authentic and transparent, then you express those things with the hopes of one, letting it out, and two, getting other people who have gone through it to help them as well.
Great. I've just made notes on that, 'cause I'm going to comment on that later. That's great. So that's so we've got an idea there. All right. Then the other one then is fake.
Artificial, inauthentic, kind of deceptive.
Good. Keep going. So that's the thesaurus definition of fake.
The idea what I associate is the idea of pandering just to get attention or just to get you know, becoming something you're not, just so that people will buy your stuff. Or
I struggle with this one because to me, everybody's reality is a little different in the world today. And sometimes when you hear a news report or something, you don't know if it's fake or not. So for me, I would say fake, when I think about it, comes to the fact of, you know, expressing yourself in a way that might not be what you are now, but it could be what you're going to be later, or it could be a persona. I shouldn't use that word, a character, or a thought process that's going to help push you forward in the future or push others forward in the future in a way that your character, the character you're building now to be, maybe.
I think that fake has a much more negative connotation than that. Well, you know, I mean, I think what Joe's saying is kind of like you're kind of, and I think I know where you're going. You're coming from the fake it till you make it kind of thing, which isn't, that isn't necessarily bad because you're trying to put forth something that like you're kind of growing into or something that even though you are faking it, this is going to sound so. We're getting into all kind of crazy logic, but even though you're faking it, it's really coming from a place of genuineness in the sense that it's where your sights are set. It's what you're going for. And it's something you really believe right. in as opposed to fake in the sense that like you're trying to be deceptive or you're trying to put across something that's inauthentic or not true or something just right. to like get as much money as you can because you don't give a crap about really what you're doing. You just want to be up here, you know, making money. So in other words, say to three of us put this group together, you know, because we thought we were going to get rich. And so we made up all kind of BS crap about like our credentials and everything like that. Just to, you know, that in my opinion, that's a different kind of thing than saying like we're learning together and we're working together and we're being honest about what our strengths and weaknesses are. And we're, you know, putting this out here in the hopes of helping people, even though maybe there's some times where the three, you know, I'm weak on something that Joe's strong on or Carrie's strong on something that Joe doesn't understand. So that's I'm going to stop there.
So but I was choosing I was choosing to come from an optimistic point of view and hope that the listeners are, and ourselves are trying to grow and help others rather than hurt others. Now, if you're faking to trick or, you know, do harm to someone, then I'm not going to advocate that at all.
Okay.
Obviously.
Good. Now that's going to be a good direction there. So this is going to come down to the notes I've got. I love that you mentioned courage and bravery of authentic. And I will return to that. So authentic, obviously, is what you've got to start with. And whatever you do, there's got to be some sort of authenticity there. Partly because lying is exhausting if you have to do it all the time. And you won't keep it up. Then the house of cards will come down for, I mean, like, how many cliches can we put in here? You can fool one person all the time, but not all the people all the time.
Right.
All the rest of it. So there has to be some level of authenticity there. And to be honest, if you're approaching this as an artist, which I hope a lot of our listeners are, then you do it because you had something you wanted to express in the first place. Going to the other side of the table, though, fake. And I'm glad that you look for a positive interpretation as well as a negative there, Joe. Because here's the thing. What is fake? Everything in the world to some level is fake.
Good point.
I mean, like, that might be, it might sound like sort of like teenage sinners of old. but no, I mean, look around. See if you can name me one thing in this world that is 100% down the line, on the money, no elaboration. I can't think of one thing.
And if you throw the three of us in a situation and pull us back out and ask us what happened, we're all going to have our different point of view on what happened. So I may say something and two of you might be like, hey, that didn't happen that way at all. So I'm the fake person. And it's like, well, no, that's the way I saw it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And if you make a policy of avoiding everything that's in any way fake whatsoever, then you're going to wear yourself out real quickly as well. Same as if on the other side of the table, if you're just trying to fake everything or if you're just trying to be absolutely truthful all the time, it won't work. Life is a balance. We've talked about the...
Just put it that way, if you want to look at it, and I think you're really making a great point to kind of elaborate upon your point, is your band fake because you rehearse? Because the reality is, like, when you play that song, you suck at it, so we shouldn't rehearse it and make it sound good, right? We want to be completely authentic. So don't rehearse, because, like, that could be, like, that's not your true self.
Well, I was jazz trained, and I've sort of had to do both over the years, so I get
well,
that.
But wait a minute now. You just used the word trained. Okay, so wait a minute now. Is that fake because you trained, you worked on it, and then I'm not talking about improvisation. You know, is improvisation fake or is improvisation real? So I'm actually trying to take your point as far as we can take it, which is you're making a good point that everything to some degree has some kind of like pre-planned or somebody, you know, there is some fakery to everything we do. I mean, your songs don't sound the way they do in the room after you, as they do when you record them, right? Because what, Carrie, right? We talked about it last week. You put a little compression on the voice, you put some reverb, you know, you're doing this and that, you know, because you want it to make it sound good on somebody's earbuds. Is that fake? You know, yes, but it's not necessarily a bad thing. So I like where you're going with this.
And that's why I've got two words for this. And I've sort of divided fake into two categories. One of them is cynically fake. And cynically fake is the people that, well, we know what cynically fake is. It's the tabloid media. It's the people who will just do whatever it takes to get the dollars in the bank and just say whatever's needed and to hell with principles. And cynically fake, you notice at once, everybody does, except for people who want to buy. I mean, I'm not going to get into what makes some people buy into things that are cynically fake, because that's not the point. The point is that is one way to look at being fake. You're doing it just because you want something out of it. But it does sometimes lead on to the other kind, which is contractually fake. Now, if you want to know a clear example of contractual fakery, it's what actors do. And what actors do, they have to inhabit a different person and create a character and do something that is not necessary. So it is by its very nature fake. But if you just do a fake performance of this new character, it's going to be shallow. It's not going to be convincing. And when the people watching this do it, they won't be able to really get invested in the performance. The term here is willing suspension of disbelief. That when you're watching a piece of art, a movie, a play, or any piece of art, you want to be able to submit to whatever vision of a world that's being presented at that particular moment, just so you can get what is being expressed. And at that point, things being absolutely real, as in every little detail and every little nuance, matters a lot less to creating something that makes that point and is just real enough to be believable and to be respectful as well. I mean, this is another thing. I think in the past, I think you've done like the Dick Van Dyke accent from time to time for Mary Poppins. And that was an example of Dick Van Dyke did a terrible Cockney accent in Mary Poppins. And it's often held up as like one of the classic bad accents because he didn't study it. There was no depth to it. He just did it very shallow. And that meant that when people listened to that, anyone who actually knew what a Cockney accent sounded like wasn't buying it. And it took you out of the character. It was much harder to submit to it. It didn't matter that if he had done a better one, I mean, like, and even now there's a lot of British actors in American shows who put on American accents. And you guys will be able to tell me better than I how good they are at
Hugh
it.
Laurie. I did yeah. not know this is I didn't I was not familiar with who he was before he played in House. And when I heard him speak when he was interviewed, I thought he was faking a British accent because that's how good he is with the American accent. I think I thought he was fantastic.
So that's
entered my mind that he was British.
And actually, that's something that's come into actor training a lot more and really developed over the last 30 years or so is actors have really got serious about going deep into what makes accents and dialects. So rather than just imitating something, they really go deep now into what makes them while they're going a certain way. And partly this is because media is global now. You can't get away with faking that on a shallow level. People will know. And so, yeah, that's a great example of where, because even though it was a fake accent, it didn't matter because he'd made the effort to do it properly.
That's a really great example. Like any really great actor, but you're also bringing your own authenticity, though, to whatever that role is. I mean, that's why you could get, and I can't think of one offhand. Maybe you guys can think of a movie where, you know, so somebody played a kid. Oh, James Bond. There's a great example. You know, There's Sean Connery's James Bond. There's Roger Moore's James Bond. There's Daniel Craig's James Bond. There's Pierce Brosnan's James Bond, and they all are playing that same character, but it's filtered through who they are. And the best performances are where one of those actors will bring really something from their soul to what they're doing. Mm. They find something about James Bond in themselves, and they make that they make that the character. And I think that's what we're talking about here with our music is, yes, there is a persona that we are kind of like portraying, but it has to come from something. There has to be an element to it that is truly expressing real depth. And you have to understand the other side of it, I think what Carrie might is going with is a really understanding what that persona is and studying it and making sure you really completely understand what you're doing. It's a fine line. It's not a black and white thing.
Yeah. So coming back now, this is what we're doing, and we talked about, we could go really far in the acting direction. I could start talking about Stanislavski and all the rest, but I don't think we want to go that deep
right
there. So we'll just say that, but what I will say about Stanislavski, and one of the things that he pioneered in acting that came into general performance, is we got this idea, he really pioneered the idea of merging two personas. And one persona will be the character you're trying to play. And in 19th century theatre, that would have meant doing certain gestures and doing it a certain way. And it wasn't about being realistic. So what he brought to it then was a series of techniques that were about taking that character, but then merging it with the character you do have experience with, which is yourself. Which meant, first of all, was finding that intersection point where you have something in common with the character and would react in a certain way to certain situations. But if that's not possible, and often it isn't, then because empathy is difficult, proper empathy is really difficult because obviously you're not experienced in what you're doing, then there is this thing called the magic if. So it's what works, and the magic if basically is what would I do in that situation if that happened to me? Okay. And even that isn't enough to show you everything.
Joe, you have a. I saw that you're chomping at the bit. You have something to say. I can tell by the look on your face.
Yeah, I'm kind of just thinking. So from a marketing standpoint, most of the things I've been taught of like where are you on a prolific index, and what's your attractive character. So, and then taking it from a personal development standpoint, you know, visualizing the person you want to be in the future. So taking a lot of what Carrie's saying, I struggle with the idea of once you have your avatar, once you know who your audience is and you know where you're at and you kind of figure out how you kind of connect with them, what makes you want to serve them, then you start to develop like your message, your character, and you've got to be try to be prolific. And a lot of times we don't feel like we're quite ready, like we're that expert yet. And taking a lot of what Carrie said, you know, if you're here and you want to help people along their path, and maybe you went from here to here and you're trying to help them, and you're also trying to grow at the same time. Like a lot of people in masterminds, they start masterminds and it's not just a one-way street. They don't help others. They get helped along the way because as they hear people talk about their businesses and they have to answer those questions, or they hear other people in the mastermind answer those questions, they're learning and growing too. It's just a lot of what Carrie's saying makes a connection for me because it's like we're all growing, we're all developing. And as we're growing and as we're creating our attractive character to help others, we don't have to be perfect. We don't have to be that persona just yet. And that persona develops over time. It's not something that happens tomorrow.
I think that an example of this from music, to bring it back to musicians, And Joe, I'm sure you know who this person is. Everybody knows who this person is. David Bowie. Mm-hmm. As Carrie says, David Bowie. He created different personas as he did different projects. But he had an overall arcing kind of thing that was about him. And there was an overall arcing authenticity to everything he did. It didn't feel... Why was that, Carrie? Why didn't what Bowie did feel like fake or like even when he became Ziggy Stardust, like we went right along with it and we got wrapped up in it. It was the Great White Duke, like everything, all the different sort of things he did, from, you know, experimental stuff to doing, you know, dance type music and everything. Like, why were we able? And I think there, because I think it has to do with his inward authenticity, but I want to know what your thoughts are on that.
Well, that's something I'm going to get onto next. Because this is the other thing, that when we talk about this idea of merging who you are with who you want to be, but also who your audience wants you to be. Last week, one of the things we talked about was this Venn diagram of what you personally, what it is you want to express and what's influenced you. And then what it is people are actually going to want when they listen to your music personally. So, and finding that common point in between the two where things are going to happen. And quite often the audience will want you to be a certain person. That is, in a way, you are being their avatar as well as your own avatar. And in the case of David Bowie, I wasn't born when he really started. I was born in 77. So he was already underway by the time I was there. But from what I understand it, from the people I know who were there at the time, certainly in this country, this is the 1970s, so it was all very cold and industrial. People lived very mundane lives. They didn't really get to travel much. And then there's this guy who's glamorous. And there was glam rock. There's things like The Suite and
T-Rex like that, and all that.
Yeah. And they're all right, but it was obviously totally performative. There was no depth. What David Bowie could do, because he started out as this troubadour, who went around with this interesting life of like free festivals and all of that, but there was just this like that extra thing that made him exotic. And the exoticness, Kev, this is how he got the whole thing of the man who fell to earth. The fact that he had his two eyes different colours, I mean, that was an accident of nature. But he ran with it and it became one of his things.
Actually, I know the story behind the eyes and I could tell it to you guys later. I don't want to digress. It's a very interesting story, but go ahead.
But anyway, so... But the point is, anyway, that here's this figure that everyone knew had pedigree going back to the 60s, who had been involved in music and had been involved in some fairly political stuff as well, like Mott the Hoople, going all the way through. So had that had that integrity to start with. And then when it was going over into the space age and with that Space Oddity album, then starts taking it off somewhere else. And at that point, there's various things that people want. We said last time, I've got it now, the Stranger Things comparison was David Bowie and Kenny Rogers. And the reason why I remembered that was because the Kenny Rogers song came on the radio just before.
Okay, all right, right. Well,
it was Coward of the County came on.
Right, okay.
Well, I think it's a bloody awful song.
I think that we need to, but I want to, because I feel like we're kind of like, digress. What I want to get to, what I'm trying to get to, is how do we do this? Like, how do we keep the finger on the pulse of what our audience is looking for? Because that's important. Because we want to relate to people. I mean, right, Carrie? Like you and I, we could all just sit in our rooms and just play music and never put anything out. But we obviously want people to hear it.
Yeah.
Okay. So how do we kind of like create that interaction between, okay, this is what I'm doing, what do you want, what do you like, oh yeah, okay, well, all right, and kind of going back and forth without becoming, you know, we all know the horror stories, you know, of people, you know, that, you know, got into show business and, you know, never were able to really be themselves because they made too much money and they were too afraid to break with the mold, or when they did, everybody hated them or blah, blah, blah.
That's kind of an occupational hazard.
Right, that's an occupational hazard. But how do we find this balance between ourselves, but yet, like I mentioned earlier, where we also want to put on a good show, we want to do something that's intriguing and enticing to the audience. Right. Like David Bowie, he created this exotic character. People lived humdrum lives. They could kind of live that out through him. Yeah. They could, you know, be Ziggy Stardust in their minds or whatever.
Mm. And I'm going to give some more examples. I mean, it all comes back to what you said last week about that Venn diagram, about why you wanted to do that, what it is you're trying to express in the first place. And the truth is, the chances are that certainly for a lot of artists, it's going to be because they are very awkward people on their own. and they need to create something else that will then express what's in there. Certainly for myself, I'm certainly speaking for myself here. I have a lot of things I want to express that just don't work in all everyday life. It's just weird if I talk about it normally. So I write a song about it. And then I can go on this journey and take things to a different direction and find out where it goes. And often that will involve, this is where before, Joe, you used the word, you mentioned courage and bravery about being authentic, and that that courage and bravery to be authentic there. That's part of it. You might not be able to find the courage to express yourself in a way that doesn't, if it so happens you don't fit in with the crowd or you feel yourself a misfit. It takes a lot of bravery to go out and just put that out as face value, and it will probably be rejected anyway. That's what you're used to. So what you do, you're trying to find a model where you can put that out so that people can look at it and think, oh, actually, I'm not relating this to something else anymore. Now I can take it at face value. And that's one of the reasons why you would come out of a character. That's one reason why you come out of a stage name or a different name, because then not only are you presenting this thing in a way that's divorced from something you already know it doesn't fit with, so now you're sort of trying to do it in its own right, so hopefully people will connect with it that way. Also, it means then if people don't like it, it does die. And this is another thing, by the way. Anyone who says they've never died on stage is either lying or hasn't worked. Everybody has disappointing responses to things. But if that happens and it's just a character or persona, then you can at least go back and think, okay, it didn't work, but it's easier to take if it's not you personally. And it was this Sony put out. Two examples, or one example we mentioned last week was Marilyn Manson. Do you know Marilyn Manson's real name?
Nope.
It's Brian Warner. And Brian Warner was a novelist. And I think he was...
Wasn't he a child star too?
Sir?
Wasn't he a child star too?
I don't know if he was a child star. I know he was a novelist. But what I do remember him saying was he wrote down this name on a piece of paper and he looked at it. And he said, as soon as I wrote down that name, I knew that was what I wanted to be. And he created this whole character based around it. And everyone in his band had names. They had this naming format of models and serial killers. So his guitarist was Twiggy Ramirez. And so that became a theme there as well, of something that was utterly theatrical. And it meant you could go further with in terms of what the songs were about. Same with Slipknot and The Mask. They could go further in darker
things. Okay, well, you can go that direction as well, but I want to also assure people that, like, there's other, that those types of personas, we're talking, like, with the David Bowie, the Marilyn Mansons, Kiss, those things, Lou Reed, some of the things that he did, some of the stuff is, like, a little more, you know, out there. We could also talk about Tom Petty and Bruce Springsteen, who are personas as well, as you know, but their personas are like they've created a more sort of grounded, everyday working man. Springsteen from the Northeast, Tom Petty from the South, kind of personas, and they've worked that into what they do. Right.
Well, that's why there was the Stranger Things and David Bowie and Kenny Rogers connection. Because obviously David Bowie is exotic and gets you to go off into certain places, asks you to come with him. And it's a lot easier to, and that's a lot better place to go if you want escapism, which a lot of people do. Kenny Rogers, meantime, is the guy that sort of like gets your day-to-day troubles and you feel like he's a lot more like you standing on there. So if you got to some other people as well that don't want to escape, they want to stay very close to who they are, but they still want an idealized version of it. Now,
that
coming back
idealized
to
version, I think that's very key right there. It's an idealized version of what it is.
And I've got to say, Kenny Rogers, when I listen to Kenny Rogers, I hear that idealized version of mundanity. I'm going to use that. The song that was on just now, Coward of the County, has got this sort of great idea of like somebody who'd lived his life as a pacifist because his dad had died in prison. And he tried to live by this promise that he made to his dad until one day something happens that means that he has to stand up and fight. That story conveniently misses out the bit where he walks. I mean, when he decides to go and fight, he takes down a picture of his dad and looks at it, not a weapon. He goes to this bar and knocks the door of about 10 guys who fight every day of their lives, and he walks in there.
Right. Well, the story is, that's beside the point. I don't want to get too far.
I think Carrie's making a good point.
you know.
Yeah. I mean, the point is that, I mean, then that story, and then that story conveniently skips to the bit where he's walking out and they're all flat on the deck. So we don't, so there's, it's not a realistic story.
So let me ask you a question.
To feel like it.
Right, right.
So do you really think Kenny Rogers and Bruce Springsteen built a persona on purpose, or did they come up with a theme for their music and a topic that they talked about all the time that eventually built their persona? Because, like, one of the things I feel for musicians is I want to know who you are. Mm-hmm. I want to know what your music's about. Like, when I say, you know, Bruce Springsteen, I want something to come to my mind that says this is who he is. This is what his music is about. And when I listen to him, this is how I feel. Mm-hmm. So did he...
What you're asking is, does the
persona, build a persona, or did he stay consistent with his message?
Let me put it this way. Let me rephrase what I think you're asking. Does your persona grow out of your art?
No, that's not what I'm saying.
Okay. Art is these folky, homespun kind of tales that he tells on with singing and playing the guitar. That's his art.
Right. But what I'm talking about is his actual message within the music.
Well, I think we're saying the same thing two different ways.
His feeling. Yeah.
Right, that's the feeling, yeah. the whatever. But so does it?
Yeah, well, Bruce Springsteen is unpretentious, like to urban ballads, basically. This is for the working man. But especially to look at Bruce Springsteen, he's got the jeans on, he plays the same telly all the time. Bruce Springsteen is the guy that every working man would be if he went out and started a band. If they might not want to put on makeup and be Gene Simmons, but they could sure as hell be Bruce Springsteen.
So he naturally had an attractive character. He was naturally someone that people could identify with. And then he was able to talk about things that people could identify with that matched his character. And therefore, staying consistent with that over time, he built up a reputation and authority. People liked him. They start coming back to him and listening to him. So my question then becomes, you know, back then, it was a lot easier to be on a prolific index in a place where you could stand out. Like, there wasn't as many people doing it. There wasn't, you know, it wasn't as easy to publish ourselves as we are doing now. Like, anybody can pick up their phone and publish today within minutes. They could be doing a podcast like this. So as far as being prolific, it would be very easy for there to be 10 Bruce Springsteens to start tomorrow. As far as the message goes. Now, as far as combining everything, it would take time.
I think there probably was when Bruce Springsteen started. And this is where, I mean, this is going to be where charisma and the quality of what you're doing. And the only way you're going to do that is just by getting on the road and gigging the hell out and cutting your teeth.
I don't have any proof of this, okay? I suspect that Springsteen's persona is... started out as something very kind of like, you know, something heartfelt, but he saw what worked and he has built on it. You know, I mean, he sees I think he's genuine in the sense that he likes the fact that he's able to touch people. He wants to keep touching people. So he,
but I want to point out that he's been consistent.
Yeah. And he is consistent.
His music always talks about something related to that genre. Right. Like that person knows I'm a Springsteen fan because I believe in this. I can follow his mission. I can follow his message.
Let me just kind of clarify a little bit here, because that consistency has bit him in the ass in recent years, because a lot of people have said, what are you talking about, Bruce? You're a multi millionaire. If you're not a billionaire now, like, you're still singing about, you know, there's no way that you can honestly be the everyman anymore. Now, I will counter that. This is what I want to get to. It's a really important point. The point is, that's his persona. He is when he is singing these songs, he is a character in the song. It's like, I can write a song, and I have written songs from female perspectives. I'm not a woman. I don't identify as a woman, but there are times I'm interested in that space, and I want to put that out. Okay, Springsteen has a whole thing going on. He's built this persona. He likes his persona. He's comfortable in it. He can work 9 ways to Pittsburgh in that persona. He can do all kinds of stuff. That's his, like, he's like free by being in that persona. So he's going to continue doing that, and the characters in the songs are not him. They are not. He isn't the guy working at the mill, you know, struggling or whatever. He's just like putting himself. Joe Strummer once said, you know who Joe Strummer is, Kerry, said that sometimes the best cowboy songs are written by a Jew from New York. Okay. So there is that aspect of fantasy and romanticizing. You know, Dwight Yoakam is not from the South. He's from Ohio. Yeah. You know, like, but he's like, he was a picture of cowboy when he broke. Like, it was like, holy crap, this guy, he's got to be from the Southwest, or he's got to be from Texas or something. He's, you know, so you find that comfortable, you find that space where you really, it resonates for you. My old guitar teacher, Tony Janflone, said that, like, when you go to sit down, you're going to improvise, like, one of the most freeing things is to have a structure. When you just play and they're not really, there's no structure, there's no framework, it's very, very difficult to make anything meaningful. So these guys have this framework. Springsteen's got a framework. Dwight Yoakam has a framework. Marilyn Manson has a framework. It's something that inherent comes out of their art and out of who they really are, the messages, Joe says, that they're trying to put out. But Tony Robbins, let's talk about Tony Robbins, Joe. I mean, you're into coaching. There's a really good example of somebody who has taken the whole coaching thing and created, he's brought his own like personality to it. He has his own, for lack of a better word, shtick to it that he uses that's very, very effective. He knows he can help people like that. That's his framework. If Tony Robbins all of a sudden came out and tried to like do something completely weird or different or put himself off as like, you know, the Maharishi or something like that, you know, people would shy away. That's not who he is. We've, you know, and I think that there's an authenticity to what he does. I think he really feels excited and he loves all that energy. And that's, so he's brought that to what he does. Marilyn Manson likes this idea of, you know, this sort of I'm going to become this person. And everybody knows I'm becoming this person. I'm not fooling anybody, you know. They all know, and they all want to go along with this. And I love this, and they love this.
Yeah. Well, so I think an overarching topic has come up here where, you know, between your persona and who you are and your message, you know, does it have to be who you are today? And I think we've explicitly said that the persona can be someone you're trying to be in the future and you're being transparent with where you are today. Or it can be someone that you develop that's going to give a specific feeling or experience to your audience that they identify with, that they either want, they need, or, you know, that it entertains them in some way. The overarching, though, topic is that you've got to be pretty much consistent with that until it starts to not work because the culture is changing or people don't believe you or whatever the case may be. Like, you know, Bruce Springsteen in the past, everybody identified with that, believed it. Now they're like, oh, well, you're rich now, blah, blah, blah. There's a certain amount of people who are like, I don't care.
Right. And I'm one of those people who don't care.
And then for the ones who are like, hey, you know, you're rich now, I don't believe anything you're saying, that's still who he was. He still identifies. There's things from our childhood we still identify with that aren't exactly who we are.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's another thing I've got in my notes.
Just said, hold on, because I don't want to get off that real quick, because you just said, what you said was gold, was the idea of there's things from our childhood. And this goes back to what Kerry talked about last week and the week before about the house, your home base. And these little things are, he's still probably in his heart, even though he's a multimillionaire, I can't put words in his mouth. Even as a multi, I would imagine in his heart, he's still that guy. Just like we're all that kid. Kerry, you're still that kid that like wanted to get, I'm still like kid that picked up that guitar and wanted to play. Joe, you're still like in your heart, you feel like, you know what I mean? Even though other things have happened. So, but this is where we have to kind of make sure that, well, not make sure, but this is where we bring in everything about ourselves to create this persona. So riff on that.
Well, I want to come back to that. I love that you used the word childhood. I've actually got a huge chunk of notes on this. I wasn't going to do it just yet, but I'm going to come back to Kiss. And I'm going to give my theory on the reason why Kiss works. And I'm going to cross-reference it with Whitesnake. Now, Kiss...
Interesting.
I'm going to get to why this is in a minute. Now, Kiss, what they actually are, and they knew this, and they sort of run with it. Kiss are then a lot of people like when they're music, they like to go back to a certain point in their lives. And a lot of people assume that's going to be young adulthood, when they start falling in love, when they start finding their freedom, they start identifying themselves. What Kiss have done, and it's a really smart move, is they've taken it a little bit further back to adolescence. Now, everything that Kiss is about, including the overt sexuality, but it's very shallow overt sexuality. In other words, it's schoolyard sexuality.
Right.
It's a schoolboy's understanding of what a stud looks like. And so you pull the trigger, my love gun, and all of this is all exactly how it's the back of the school. It's the back seat of the school bus. It's exactly how schoolboys talk about sex when they're trying to like make them sound bigger. And it goes straight back to the image and about the spaceman and all that as well. It's that point in life where you're not ready to let go of all that shit from your childhood because fuck it, it's cool. And you want to mix that with all this other stuff that adulthood promises and all this stuff that you're not meant to care about now. And somewhere in amongst all of that is rock and roll. And you can go your whole life never wanting to lose that wonderful moment when you still get to play with toys. You still get to and play with spacemen and dolls. And also you get to have sex. So that's where... So that is that particular point that they've come from. And it's great. And that's also why when they've tried to go a bit deeper, even when they did their concept album, Music from the Elders, and it bombed hard. And every reviewer was saying it's because the number of times I've read reviews of that, and it said about the kindergarten level of the story that they're telling. Well, that's actually the point. It's exactly the story that you would write if you were a schoolboy doing all that. And it's also why Kiss... When they took the makeup off and they were just another hair band, it still wasn't the same because you'd sort of like lost that sort of a space aspect of it. And that's why they were at their best in makeup, because it was that. Coming back to Whitesnake now. Now, David Coverdale, I love Whitesnake, but the songs are ridiculous. The songs are, I don't think anybody really takes slip of the tongue seriously.
Okay.
I mean, I loved it. When I first heard their Donington set, and this is when they had Steve Vai in the band, and David Coverdale and Steve Vai didn't get on, partly because he felt that Steve Vai was taking it in a too far away from the blues that he started from. But why it worked was David Coverdale wrote completely over-the-top sexy songs, and he had the whole thing about I'm a love hunter, and it was all very much about... It was cock rock, straight-up cock rock. But it was cock-rock that worked because the music was fucking ace. Now, Kiss, that wasn't on the table for Kiss because they weren't good enough musicians. But Whitesnake made up for it by keeping that sort of like juvenile understanding of that and going with that little thing that you still want to tap into. But without doing like the spaceman stuff, which maybe wasn't cool at that point, then just make it up for it by just making the music fucking awesome and actually doing really good rock and roll with it. But it's still tapped into a certain...
It's that energy that you have at that age. And I think this is one of the reasons why Kiss goes back out all the time and people still... And they're selling out and everything because people want to have that experience. This goes back to what is the experience that you are giving to your audience? And part of it is the music, of course. The other part of it is...
You're
the persona of the show. So do you come on and like as alternate characters like Marilyn Manson and Kiss do? Do you come on as like somebody like Bruce Springsteen or Tom Petty or John Mellencamp? You know how, you know, you've got to find what kind of, I think it comes down to what resonates with you. Like, I can't imagine, I mean, not everybody is going to, you know, adorn some crazy outfits and become, a space character. You know, and it would be inauthentic for Gene Simmons to go on stage as like a Springsteen-esque kind of performer.
Yeah, no one would buy it.
Not only would no one would buy it, it wouldn't be true to him. That's not who he is. You know, he's just the guy that's banged like, 5,000 women or something like that. You know, that's not even in his wheelhouse. So you have to kind of find out, you have to explore this because there's a, but you don't want to, I think that what's important, we have to come away with this, and I want you guys to talk about this. You just can't just be yourself, though. You have to have some thing about it that, like, you know, it's, like Kenny Rogers is an exaggerated version of the, you know, cowboy kind of guy. David Bowie is an exaggerated character. Yeah. Gene Simmons, Bruce Springsteen, he's an exaggerated, I'm going to use this word. This word is usually connected with negative ideas, but I think it's the right word, and it's caricature. You have an exaggeration. So you're taking something. Springsteen's taking this working man thing. He's kind of exaggerating a little bit, making it a little bigger so that, like, it's the idea of care. You've been in, you know, the stage theater, right? You've got to play to the back of the house. You've got to exaggerate all your motions and everything and all the things to, like, kind of get it out. This is the same idea. So you take that little thing that you do, that thing that resonates, and you have to somehow make it bigger. What do you think about that?
One of the most fundamental tricks of performing in anything is the back wall trick, which almost feels like a cheat when you first hear about it. Have you ever been to a show and the guy on stage, you think that guy sang to me personally?
Right.
It's like eye contact all the way
through. He looked right at me. He sang that line.
Lots of people think that. Okay, here's how you do it. There's probably about lots of other people in the audience that felt that way too. Because if he was actually addressing it to just one person, then he's left out everyone else in that crowd. So what you do is you pick a point on the back wall behind everybody and you sing to that one point as if it is the one person you want to sing to. And then everyone in between will think it's the... have you ever been in a situation where you've been walking down the street and there's someone across the road sees someone they know behind you? Yeah. Says, oh, hi.
Yeah, and you wave,
you realize that they're actually talking to the guy behind.
Right.
That's what the back wall trick does. It's taking that moment where they're actually sort of talking to everyone behind them, and everyone in between will think it's a personal, heartfelt performance, and they don't know that you're actually doing the same thing to everyone in the
room. Right. So that's a little bit of a trick. But how do you feel, Joe, about this idea of taking who you are and kind of like, just let's grow that. Let's make that a little bigger, because even on video, guys, we've got, you know, most people are looking at a screen this big. They're looking at a cell phone. So how do I come across, I don't want to say larger than life, but like a little bit more impressive on a tiny screen? So I think that those are legitimate things that you have to ask and play with.
So I think, you know, it comes down to, and I'm going to say this again, knowing your message, knowing exactly, you know, what you're going to try to say to your audience, and building that into like who you are. Cause most of the time we identify with the people we want to help anyway. Like we came from there, you know, where our music is about something we've experienced. Like it doesn't come out of thin air usually. Okay. So, and then dialing yourself up to like 11, like most of us,
dialing up to 11. I like that.
Most of us are like, you know, we're kind of afraid to stand out in front of the crowd. We're kind of afraid to show all of our little nuances. We sing in the car, like maybe not you guys, but we sing in the car, we sing in the shower, and we don't like dial ourselves up to be everything we can be in front of people. And I think if we could get away from our insecurities and dial ourselves up and share that, have one, you know, one ultimate message, like it doesn't have to be one message, but if all your, think of this, all your albums, if all your songs had one overarching message, and then you could pick little messages underneath that, how much easier is it to then say, okay, now I know how to brand my CDs. Now I know I can put these little songs together here. I can put those songs together there, and I can, like, everybody knows what I'm about. And then it's easier to dial myself up, because now it's like, okay, this is the message I want to get out there. This is what I care about. And I'm going to dial myself up because I need to get that out there. But I do like, so that's how like you identify with your message and yourself. But I do like what Carrie said about, you know, visualizing the dialed up character as not yourself. Visualize that dialed up character as a persona. And if he falls a little bit, he's on a screen and you can help push him up, or, you know, help pick him up off the ground when things don't work, or her. I don't want to, you know what I mean? So I like that idea. I like that whole thought process, because I have a message. I'm trying to get it out to an audience. I know who my audience is. I have an overarching like reason for my music, people I can identify with that. And I have a character that I identify with, but it's not my day to day who I am, because, and that allows me to take like step back as a third party and build that person up, or and help that person become what they need to be to get that message out to that audience. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I think what I've seen and I've heard and is the difference between Ted Nugent on stage or on the radio or whatever versus if you were to sit down and like have a beer with him. Alice Cooper on stage doing his thing versus Alice just hanging out, you know, running into him at the Walmart or whatever. And that is, and I love the idea as of it's sort of like stepping outside of yourself as a kind of, you know, like almost treating it as if that person is, it's a little mental exercise, or I don't know what you want to call it, of sort of stepping outside yourself and saying, okay, what is this person look like? And I don't have to be that person every day, all day long. I just got to make sure that when I'm, you know, doing a live video, or when I'm sitting down to write my blog, or when I'm sitting down to perform, or when I'm on stage, that persona, you know. So what's his name? Brian Warner? Was it Marilyn Manson's name? So Brian Warner's thinking, what would Marilyn Manson do in this situation? What would Brian Warner do in this situation?
Yeah.
I'm using that because it's a great way to kind of truly separate, because there's two different names. You can really kind of like dig into what that is, and there's a lot of options that all of a sudden becomes easier. I think what you're saying, Joe, is that once you know what that is, then you can go all kind of places with it. Is that?
Yeah, that message and foundation came from something that Brian Warner experienced. Brian Warner identifies with Marilyn Manson in some way.
Right.
But then he developed his alter ego, his persona, to take that and dial it up to 11 and share it with the world.
Hell yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the other thing then is Marilyn Manson can go to some dark fucking places. Well, and Brian Warner doesn't have to take all that.
Thing. Like and you hear actors say all the time, I love playing villains because I can explore this like crazy stuff that like, oh, no way I can get away with in real life.
Yeah. So, yeah, coming back to that one, I mean, Alice Cooper, we mentioned there, also had the very publicized feud with Marilyn Manson, which later turned out to be stage managed. But there were some choice quotes that came in there, like starting like, I get it, it's a guy with long black hair and a girl's name. But then he said this one about when someone sees him out bowling, he's finished. And that actually, in the end, it was golf. I think he's a keen golfer, man. In fact, I think they both are. But it didn't matter at that point, because by that point, this is what I mean by contractually fake. Everyone knows it's a character you go along with.
Right.
And there might be people who get a bit too carried away with it and want it to be really real, but they're probably, sort of quote Mick Foley, they're probably the same people who think Dr. Evil's really trying to take over the world.
I think that once that is established, you can have fun with this, because once, and now we're talking about, we need to bring this back down to indie musicians here in a second, okay, when we wrap up, because we're kind of going off on a thing. But once that's truly established, and then you see Alice Cooper or Marilyn Manson like on the golf course, you see some picture, you know, or whatever, and that adds a whole other dimension to like your like fantasy about them, and it can become really fun for the audience. It doesn't, at that point, it doesn't take anything away. So let's bring this back down. Let's take a step, because we're talking about Kiss and Alice Cooper, and we're talking about Bruce Springsteen, and you know, let's give in the final moments here. What can I do? I'm an independent artist. You know, I'm doing the music that I, you know, I love. You know, I listened to the last week's podcast. You know, I know that, you know, I've got to, you know, bring in my life's experiences and my interests and whatever, and that's all falling into this. So what do I do? What can I do right now? What's the next step for me?
Well, first of all, write a lot. Write, so keep writing. Mm-hmm. So you know what it is you've got to say. Get it out in front of people somehow. And there's lots of ways you can do that. Ideally, get out and do it live. Not everybody can go out and tour, but it does help if you can play your live dues at some point, if it's open mics or whatever. I did. I was out most nights when I was all through my 20s. And that's usually when it is. If you can't do that, even if it's on webcams or getting stuff out onto lists or whatever, but actually get it out in front of people. But then, and here's the main thing, actually pay attention to what's how things are received. And part of this is going to be letting go of your own preconceptions of it, and definitely not getting bent out of shape if people don't like it. It's actually damnably hard now to get a bad review, an actual bad review.
Yeah, we talked about that before, yeah.
Yeah, it used to be that most reviews you got would be some journalist trying to be a comedian. So it probably meant that bad reviews were in the majority. But now actual reviews as opposed to YouTube comments from that sort of job sort of gone onto the YouTube trolls. Actual reviews now tend to, if anything, be too positive because they don't want to discourage anybody. So sometimes you'll find people who will actually give you sort of frank reviews. But one of the reasons why people don't is because so many artists that do it only want to hear positive. So in a way, what you have to do is be your own worst critic. And you have to read between the lines a bit and say, okay, that was well received here, and that one was well received in this one. But that one didn't do as well as I'd hoped. It didn't get as much attention. And you think, well, maybe it didn't hit right, or maybe it's just that particular message isn't resonating as much as this particular message is. Even though I like this message better, this one is hitting home a bit more. So I'm going to put a bit more effort into this one for the time being, and then maybe try and bring that other one closer. So do pay attention to what's landing. But all of this is having this feedback system now of putting stuff out there, seeing how it's received, and actually being quite candid about it. The trick is to do this without getting negative. And the absolute worst thing you can do is ever lash out about these things, because we've said this before about when people lash out and just sort of it just means they'll alienate people who want to help them, because people want to see you build as much as you want them to build. There might well be a lot of people who are watching your progress but haven't made themselves known yet. That is another reality of this. And if you manage to alienate them before you get them to become what they want you to be, you will never know they were even listening to you. But if you do make progress, sooner or later, they will make themselves known. That's something else that you don't always realize when you're starting out. There's always people watching. And it might just not be your time yet to really get to where you think you want to be. We had somebody lately on Fashion the Net put line in there and say, I think this one song from the inbox that didn't make it through was by far the best track. And because it didn't, I'm not going to vote for anyone. And I can say, so, okay, what instrument do you play in the band? And if you don't, then it's obviously some super fan. And it just makes you look stupid.
Yeah, yeah.
So when you do things like that.
Finding real feedback is can be tough. However, if you play live, I think that you will find out, you know, if it's good, you get people will come. I mean, they won't automatically come, but you'll keep doing it. And it will get out. People will go like, well, these guys are really good. This is really good. You know, I think that's something that is missing with a lot of people that want to like just do this thing online and not really go out and put themselves out there. And if you can't do that, at least try to do live video to kind of like see how that's received. See what people, I'm always watching that. Okay, they like this one, I guess one. And you have to do a lot of them too, guys, because you can't just do like one live video a week, because maybe people that would really like it don't even see it. So you've really got to like put that out there to kind of like see if you're doing a live video every single day of different songs. And also, over time, you increase the chances of more people seeing it, and then you can then you can make a better judgment as to what's working and what's not. If you're not doing it enough, you know, you do something live once in a while, you know, people might like it just because it's a novelty. You know, because you never hardly do it, or they may never see it and they may not say anything. So you don't know until you have to crank it out and kind of play with that and do what Joe said. Dial it up, you know. OK, once you see what's working, dial that up, crank that up. You know, people like when I, you know, whatever, people like when I wear that crazy hat. Okay, so I'm going to bring the crazy hat in, and okay, what else goes with that? And, you know, keep like, what, Joe, what do you got?
So I still reach back to the fact that you have to have some kind of overarching message to your music. You have to have something from yourself that you're wanting to express that in your music that other people can identify with. And then dial that up as high as you can, share it with as many people as you can, and let it grow just like you will over time. Don't worry so much about the money. And I know that's, you know, we all do, and it's something that's hard to say even. But worry more about expressing yourself, sharing a specific message, a specific theme to your music, that people can identify with, give them experience, and let them vote. Let them say, hey, I like this. And if you do that and you stay true, you'll grow over time, and that message will change a little bit over time, and it may change a lot over time. But you'll get an idea of what works. Your music will get better in a lot of different ways, and you'll grow as a musician.
And the thing I'd add to what we're saying there about the performance, definitely about finding out what works and gets there. The other thing that you'll do, especially at open mics, is you will have, you will learn how to win over a crowd that's, we have said that that thing before, but everybody starts from a point of like, who the fuck are you? It's I mean, like, open mics are generally sympathetic audiences, because most of the people in there are going to be performers themselves. But what will still happen is you'll go in there, and the thing you hear all the time is that everyone talked through my set, or they went off to the bar. So I might. So I think about whenever I hear people tell me about what a terrible crowd they had. Is, well, what did you do about it? And initially, you're not going to have an answer to that question. You've got to figure out over time of being in that situation, of knowing the way to win them back. And the answer is not going to be the same each time. It's going to be some way of knowing which songs to pull out. It's going to be knowing what to say, how to address people, when to emphasize the music, when to emphasize the vocals. There will always be times when people aren't giving you the attention you want, and there are little tricks you can use to try and get them back looking your way. If you start off with a rough crowd and you win them over, those are the moments that are gold. Better than when you start out with a good crowd and have a good gig. That's great, but it was a good crowd to start with. The real best ones, and the ones that are going to make your reputation, is when you step in front of a bad crowd and you come away with a win, and it's doable. That's like scoring a home run.
So the one question I have is, when you're like, I'm not a musician, I've said this a million times, when you're performing in front of an audience, you do get that feedback. You can see their faces. Mm. You can see if they're paying attention. You can see if they're cheering, they're raising their lighters, or whatever the case may be. And you get that feedback to where if you're on YouTube or somewhere like that, you're really looking for large numbers of people to make large comments to give you feedback, because the fewer you have, and I'm saying large numbers, guys. I'm not talking like 100 comment or 100 viewers, you know what I mean? In order to get that feedback and know what your music's about. So I don't know. It sounds like it's kind of hard to start off performing just online to get those numbers and to get the feedback that you might be looking for. Is that true?
Yeah. I mean, this is the people I know who've, I mean, Lou, you've studied this. You're our guy about social media. What I've heard about this is that the people who have successful channels went through probably a good couple of years of crickets building the channel.
It takes a very, very long time, and you have to try different things. Most, like, for instance, just with YouTube, most of the people that are successful YouTubers have tried different things. They started a channel thinking, okay, this is a hot thing I'm going to do, and nothing happened.
And they're probably piggybacking off of other things going on.
And so they picked something else, and they picked something else. So don't be afraid to try different stuff until you find what's going to land. It has to come, though, as Joe says, from your heart, your message, you know, as Carrie would say, you know, what is true to you. You know, think of the examples that we gave today And it takes a while. An easy audience really is your Facebook people or your Twitter people, depending how tight you are with either one of those. If you're more of a Twitter guy or Facebook guy, those are people that are probably already like you. You're probably already interacting with. So start doing that and hone it. If you can win somebody, it's tough to win somebody over in video because it's much. I always tell people, like, I always felt like I was way better in person than I am, like, in anything else. If you come meet me face to face, you know, all of a sudden there's like an energy there, a warmth there that comes, you know, and you can pick up on. You've got to really kind of project that on camera. And also, you got to think about what people are used to looking at on these videos. And, you know, rising to the same level of, you know, whatever professionalism, a lot of the musicians that do well, and I hate to say this, that do well in video have some kind of look going on. Mm. You have to have some kind of look and I can't remember her name. There's a young lady who puts out these videos. She does very so-so versions of pop songs. She plays guitar. She's like a solid guitar player, but she is also a model. I mean, she's insanely good looking, like crazy good looking. So that is her shtick. Here's a hot model who can play pretty good guitar and sing. So, you know, that's right in your face. That gets your attention. People stop. What's going on here? And so she is like millions of views. I don't have that advantage. And a lot of you don't. A lot of us are older, and some of you, you know, some of us just, you know, don't have that going on. So we've got to think, like, what is going to grab people? You know, are you just such an amazing singer that, like, people are going to be like, whoa? Or do you have a really interesting take on songs? Or do you, you know, whatever. You've got to kind of, like, and you won't know until you just do it and fall down, do it and fall down, do it and fall down. There's no other way. I mean, anybody tells you that there's the formula and you're going to be successful, it's just bullshitting you.
Yeah. I mean, like, the other end of the scale to what you just said is something like Davey 504. You've seen his videos. He's in the, I think he's Italian. And his thing is that he does this very deadpan approach on there, and he's got lots of catchphrases that will come up with big, like, Batman style things on there.
Yeah, and that's a shtick. That's his brand. Yeah, that's his persona.
And his thing is slap bass, which he's very good at. And then it's all about interacting with other people that he finds online in different ways doing slap bass.
So he found some way to make it work. Yeah,
yeah.
That's what you got to do. You can't just, you know, there's, you know, unless you have some type of, like, you're going to do like you're a coach or you're teaching something and it is so, like, really profound and really, really important that, you know, I always make the joke that, like, if you could invent the product that, like, all I got to do is take a pill and I grow my hair long again. You know what I mean? That'll probably grow with word of mouth, like, very, very quickly. So you probably don't need too much stick with that. But barring something like that, you have to have something to, like, get to people, kind of, like, bring them into the experience, get them kind of excited, get them to laugh or go, like, oh my God, that guy is so ugly. What the hell is he doing? You know what I mean? He's, you know, you see the guy, there's the guy that plays the skateboard guitar, you know, that gets people to, there's all these things like that. So you've got to think about, like, you know, I want to bring people in. I want them to like what I do. I mean, you know, I would imagine that even just being a great songwriter, Kerry, is probably not even quite enough these
days. There are many great songwriters.
Yeah, so you've got to kind of, like, if you want to rise above the noise, and the other thing you could do is you could always pay Orange Tree Marketing to, you know, build your funnel and create ads and drive traffic as well. That's something else that you can do, because sometimes even you do all this stuff and maybe it's good and it just doesn't get heard because you're just not big enough. So you can move it a little faster by doing some paid stuff as well. But even then, people will get bored with you if you're not doing something fun and getting them involved and having them feel like, yeah, you know, I love this. This guy's funny, or he's an idiot, or whatever. I mean, you know, the old joke about Howard Stern, right? You know, 80% of his listeners listen because they don't, because, you know, they're pissed off and they want to hear what he's going to say next. The other percent of the listeners listen because they love him and they want to hear what he's going to say next. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. You know, anything could come out of his mouth. So people, that was his shtick. That's just what he did. And you have to find that for yourself. I don't think it's all been done. Do you think it's all been done, Carrie?
Nah.
No. You think there's still room for it for artists?
If you try to find the next thing, but in terms of always just trying to pursue innovation, you probably find it has been done, but just it didn't work. So it still has to be natural to start with. But
people,
there'll always be
good.
There'll always be two. There'll always be variations.
I think too. Remember, at the end of no matter what business you're in, and maybe you tell me I'm full of shit. I think no matter what business you're in the people business.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's in a people business. That's the thing I learned. We all learned from Starbucks, right? They took coffee that you could buy for 39 cents and charge $2.39 for it because they're in the people business and not the coffee business. So that's really what we got to think about is we're in the people business. You know, we want to, you know, interact with people. We want people to interact with us. And you've got to keep playing around a little bit. Joe said, it's got to come from your personal message. It's got to come from it's got to be authentic to who you really are. But then you've got to amp that up. You got to dial that up. You have to like, okay, how do I make that bigger? You know, if my shtick is, you know, I'm a bald guy with a nipple painted on my head. Okay. Well then like, how do I, you know, get that out there? What do I, you know, how do I make that bigger? How do I get that in people's faces? So I think that's pretty much all we can say about it. Anything you guys want to, we're pretty much done. Any final thoughts or anything before we wrap up?
I would say that it might be a little harder to be prolific these year, you know, this time, because there's so many people out there. But to build define your avatar, find your message, and then build the perfect offer isn't as hard. As long as you look at your music from that direction. So I would start with the perfect offer of like, how are you going to get your music out there? How do you feel most comfortable getting your music out there? What can you incorporate with your music like we've talked about before? And then what's your overarching message for your music? What's your overarching, like, what's your music going to be about? What topics it going to be on? And then just finding those people who like it, right? Just get in front of the people who like it. And then seeing where it goes from there. Nothing can be promised. Like any marketer or anyone who promises you that your music is going to take, your offer is going to take off, they can build certain things into it, but they can't guarantee it. So it comes down to just having a flow for the way, you know, you approach developing your music.
Okay. And Carrie?
Yeah, I think we're about there.
Okay, yeah. I think we said all that can be said about this. All right, we're done for today on the show, guys. You can go to LudiniRockAndRollCircus.com to check out past podcasts. We're all over iTunes. It's no longer called iTunes. Apple Music and Spotify as well, so you can subscribe to us on there. If you want to be brought into the experience, you want to go to LouLombardiRocks.com. Joe Freeman created an insanely awesome funnel there, so go to LouLombardiRocks.com and you get really brought into anything, any aspect of what we're talking about here, from things like this mastermind to, you know, my music or the community, etc. So check that out. Carrie, what's your website again, buddy?
KJKmusic.co.uk.
And Joe, how do people reach out to you directly?
Yeah, so you can go to orangetreemarketing.com, but you can also go to calendly.com/orangetree and just set up an appointment with me to talk to me directly.
All right, guys, thanks for hanging out. We'll catch you guys all on the next Ludini Rock and Roll Circus Musicians Mastermind. Mm-hmm.